In this segment, we're going to talk about the value and importance of history in our social structure, in its best form presentation of history and what our society's foundations are to take place via firsthand stories of experience, or in lieu of that, the preservation of locations, monuments, or elements with the factual teaching about the significance. However, when political correctness and reinterpretation, I hate that word so much, invades, some ugly results can happen, as we're now seeing, for example, regarding a World War I memorial cross in Maryland that the U.S. Supreme Court will be deciding on whether it remains or comes down and has to be relocated. And as my next guest writes about as well in his new book, it's called Erasing America, Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past. He is a senior fellow for national security affairs at the American Foreign Policy Council and a member of the advisory board to the National Civil War Museum, James S. Robbins. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Learn more about the American Foreign Policy Council at afpc.org. And reading your bio, I get to the point where your advisory board of the National Civil War Museum, you do realize as soon as you say Civil War Museum, that instantaneously creates enemies for you because of what the misconceptions and false beliefs are about that time in history.
Oh, well, you know, if people aren't interested in the Civil War, I mean, just generically, if they think that there's something wrong with being interested in America's greatest conflict, then I think that they just reject history per se. I mean, it would be sad, you know, I know that there are issues around the Civil War and how it's portrayed, but if they just reject it out of hand, then they might as well reject all history.
Now, I referenced the Memorial Cross in Maryland, and it sounds like the opponents of the cross are leaning on the fact that the upkeep of the cross is government-funded. It's around $100,000 or so every year to maintain and the upkeep of that World War I memorial. But if that was the only sticking point with them, then why would they not be just saying, well, remove the government funding and we'll be good with this? Instead, they want it gone completely. Seems like a bit hypocritical.
Oh, well, that's true. The cross, the Bladensburg Peace Cross, which was erected by the VFW and others to honor World War I dead from that area of Maryland, was originally private, but then it was taken over by the state of Maryland in 1961. And that constitutes what opponents of the cross say is the excessive entanglement of the government with the cross, which to them, because it is a religious symbol or it is used as a religious symbol by Christians, constitutes a violation of the First Amendment. So even if it was $1 that was being spent, that would still give the opponents of the cross the opportunity to say, oh, this is excessive entanglement.
Or I should say, too, it's not just moving. They are willing to compromise. If you lop off both sides of the cross, they'll be happy with that.
That's true. To have an obelisk, of course, then I guess pagans or somebody could say that it's their symbol then, you know, if it's an obelisk, and then we'd have another challenge.
Now, with your book, Erasing America, you talk about the various elements, various paths that most people think as something positive, something educating, something reinforcing of the spirit of America that are being attacked. How fine-tooth comb, how minute are some of these things that set people off and they want it eradicated?
Oh, well, I mean, it's almost everything. I was very interested in the defacing of the statue of the sailor kissing the woman from the end of World War II, you know, the famous photograph of
right.
The sailor in Times Square, wherever it was.
Who just passed away recently, by the way.
Yeah, who just passed away. And so to honor his passing, somebody tracked down a statue of that scene and spray painted it with "Me Too," as though the woman who was being kissed was being assaulted. I mean, we don't actually know who the woman was, or maybe they do. I've never heard that she objected to it. There was a lot of this celebration going on, and in fact, it's properly contextualized as people being happy that we had defeated the Nazis. And that, you know, the killing in Europe, the dying of Americans in Europe to free Europe was over. I mean, that's something that people would be happy about, you know, that maybe the United States, once the Japanese were defeated, would stop rationing you know, and that we could return to life as normal. Okay, so an emotional moment in which people felt joy, and folks expressed this in different ways, and one of the ways was in that picture. But now it's been recontextualized by radical feminists and other people as being a symbol of an assault, that that picture shows a crime being committed, the sailor is assaulting a woman, and that the statue honors this crime. Well, I mean, that's just sad.
Just going through your book, Erasing America, I see you write about instances of people objecting to the American flag, to George Washington, but Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer?
Oh, yeah. Rudolph, you know, because, yeah, he was bullied is the thing. Now, you know, when I was a kid watching that show, I always thought that, yeah, Rudolph was being bullied, but in the end, we had a lesson about bullying. I mean, isn't that really the message there, that Rudolph the misfit was treated badly by some of his friends? He wasn't allowed to be in the reindeer games, but at the end, he shows that even people with sort of different abilities, that everybody can find a place. And I thought that was the whole message of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, was a message of inclusion. But apparently to the humorless scolds of today, even portraying this, you know, in Santa Claus's sweatshop is another problem, it is a bad thing. Well, these folks just got to lighten up.
Well, it's kind of amazing where when it comes to religion, we're supposed to have an abstract thought. We're told to be concrete, but with all these other concrete ideas that are being objected to, that you write about in Erasing America, we're supposed to take those into the abstract to stretch them out for them to fit the point that those other people are trying to make.
Oh, yeah. You go down a lot of strange rabbit holes when you try to follow the thinking of these ideologically pure people who want to remake the world in some kind of collectivist image. And really, that was the point of the book, or the way that I wrote the book, and also starting off talking about George Orwell, that this is a totalitarian instinct on their part. There's any specific objection that they have to a monument or to a custom or something like that, it's really part of this grander idea they have to completely destroy our history and our traditions and what America stands for, and replace it with some kind of collectivist totalitarian image that they think is the way to live.
Talking with James S. Robbins, his book Erasing America, Destroying Our Future by Erasing Our Past, available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your favorite means of getting a book, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. You know, truth be told, even our heroes had their flaws, or they committed actions which at the time were acceptable. Wouldn't it be better, rather than try to erase them, just teach more fully about them? They're good parts, they're maybe not so good parts, and parts that we are best left to let other people try to figure out.
Oh, sure. Folks have to have an understanding of history in order to understand the good of history, the bad of history, and all the things that happen. At Yale University, for example, they talked about changing the name of Calhoun College because Senator Calhoun was a supporter of slavery and, you know, a Yale alumnus. And in fact, they did change the name of the college. But on the way to doing that, they discussed this issue of the nuances of history and how nobody is perfect. And if you dig enough, you're going to find something to enrage somebody about anybody's hero. And they came up with a standard called principal legacy, in which you look at the whole person and say, oh, what did they do that we still are affected by today? A principal legacy that, you know, for good or ill, what is it exactly that they did? And so this is how they can say, well, Calhoun's principal legacy, they didn't think that his other actions in the Senate were more important than his support for slavery. So they say, okay, his principal legacy was negative, so we're going to change the name of the school. But if you look at somebody like George Washington, well, he was a slave owner, true, but he did a lot of other really important things, like found the country. So you have to look at the whole man, and the same could be said of Thomas Jefferson.
Which sounds like if you are one of those maybe overly sensitive individuals who want to fine-tooth comb every part of history, would be one of the paths to go. But what James does with Erasing America, Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past, it really teaches you, I think, the importance of how we all need to be keepers of the factual history and not to have it reinterpreted, there's that word again, to the few versus what the many understand and appreciate about it. James is also a member of the advisory board of the National Civil War Museum and a senior fellow for national security affairs at the American Foreign Policy Council. Their website is afpc.org. Again, the book, Erasing America, Losing Our Future by Destroying Our Past. James Robbins, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.